Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN, and time for the Week in Health. Joining us, as always, Dr. Jeremy Silver, who comes to us from the Northwestern Kishwaukee Hospital, where he is Medical Director of Emergency Medicine. Dr. Silver, how are you there, my friend?
Dean, good to be back. Thanks for having me.
I'm waiting to see how soon it's going to be until our phone line drops.
Until you hang up on me, Dean?
Yeah, no, it's not. I guarantee it's not us doing it. For some reason, there's a glitch. For some reason, it always happens during this segment. So we're going to keep our fingers crossed. They tell us that they fixed it, so we'll see what happens. We have had some incredible weather, some really nice, beautiful, sunshiny weather, although a little overcast right at the moment. But people are outside like crazy right now. It's probably not a bad time just to remind everybody about precautions they should take if they're going to be out in the sun, right?
Well, yeah, I think it's important. And it's one of these things that, you know, it's not a clear and present danger. People aren't thinking when the sun is shining and they're heading to the beach, I better protect myself against skin cancer. But that is, excuse me, that's the reality that that exposure to sun and certainly the frequency and intensity of the burn is linked to the risk of cancer. But there's an easy way to protect yourself, and that is to utilize sunscreen.
And, you know, there are so many choices when you go to the store. How do you know what to pick?
Well, you know, certainly higher is better in terms of the SPF, and that's just the rating in terms of the protective amount, the amount of protective material in the sunscreen liquid. But what the dermatologists say is if you're going for an hour or two, 30 is fine. If you're going to be outdoors all day, go for 65 or higher.
Is it necessary to reapply after a certain time? You know, you're outside, you're working out in the garden or whatever, you're in a pool somewhere, something is the protection must be coming off or, you know, sweating off, right?
Correct. So the recommendation is to reapply every 2 hours, either with exercise or excess perspiration, which I guess, what is excess perspiration? Your sweaty may be different than my sweaty,
right.
But certainly every couple hours is reasonable.
And they say that the areas that that there are certain areas of the body that get neglected, even if you are a sunscreen user. What are the areas? I mean, you thoroughly saturate yourself everywhere possible, right?
Yeah, I think just basically you want to apply it naked if you can. And if you think about, you know, when you take your kids and you just grab them and slather it on, you're really applying it everywhere. But don't forget the ears, the back of the neck, the nose, and certainly the forehead and chin, you know, so all the parts of the face. People often forget their hands and their feet. And that's very important. I think I mentioned last time, I don't know if it was recorded or not, but Bob Marley, the reggae artist, died of melanoma, and it was on the base of his toe.
Oh, really?
So, yes. Yeah. So that's kind of the apocryphal tale that they teach in medical school, and just always try and remind people, just use as much sunscreen as you can. And by the way, it doesn't matter how dark or light your skin is. Everyone can get cancer,
yeah.
Whether you're heavily pigmented or not.
So, I mean, I've always heard that, you know, people who are fair-skinned are more prone to sunburn, skin cancer than people who are of a darker complexion. That's not true.
Well, I think it's certainly easy to burn when you're pale, but that's not to say that you can't burn if you're dark.
Okay, so everybody still needs to take precautions regardless then.
You got it.
All right, very good. Let's move on. This is, I am told, Lung Cancer Awareness Month. Is that, you know, something that only people who smoke should be aware of? Is this something that we all should be aware of? What does that mean exactly? American Lung Association's Lung Cancer Action Week.
Well, so lung cancer is obviously it's a cancer of the lung, and it can involve many different parts of the lung, either the sac around the lung or the tubes that carry the air into the lungs, or the little sacs where air exchange occurs, where the oxygen goes into the blood and the carbon dioxide comes out of the blood and you breathe it out. So anywhere in that sponge network, you can develop a cancer. Now, there's different types of cancer. There's small cell lung cancer and non-small cell lung cancer. Really, the types don't matter. The point is that, you know, we're all vulnerable. Certainly, those who smoke are significantly more at risk, but there are still people at risk who don't smoke. And it's tough to pick those people out of a crowd. So that's why it's certainly important to be visiting your primary care doctor on a regular basis.
So are there things that people should do to ensure safety of their lungs as much as possible? I have to think that the air that we breathe is loaded with toxins anyway. I don't know if we can actually do anything about that, but that probably is the case. Smoking, obviously, is going to be a factor in this.
Smoking's the big one. You know, smoking is a significant risk factor for cancer. In fact, smoking is responsible for about 90% of lung cancer deaths in the U.S. So, you know, quitting smoking, you may think, well, I've smoked for 20 years, you know, the horse is out of the barn. Not so much. You can still reduce your risk. And, of course, reduce the risk of heart attack, lower your blood pressure, reduce the risk of blood clots, et cetera, et cetera. So there's plenty of value to quitting smoking, even if you've been smoking for a long time. And then, of course, the lung cancer pieces, you can't emphasize it enough.
Now, I quit smoking in 1988. I don't know if they still do this, but they then had something called the Great American Smokeout, where I think it was the American Lung Association or maybe the American Cancer Society encouraged people to stop smoking for just one day. And I did, and one day turned to 2 days, and now, however many years later, I still am, you know, have not even had a puff of a cigarette in that time. I'm too afraid I'll start again. It, you know, unfortunately, it's very pleasurable. And so I've just completely avoided it. Are my lungs still affected as a result of my smoking however many years ago? How many years ago was that? 40 years, 35 years, something like that?
Well, part of it depends on how long you smoked when you did smoke.
Yeah, I was one of those dumb kids, like little kids, teenagers maybe.
Yeah.
You know, hey, this is going to make me look cool. I'll steal some cigarettes and smoke cigarettes. Now, look, don't I look so cool?
Well, Dean, it's all kind of individual, but generally speaking, if you smoke for maybe, say, a couple of years and then quit, you definitely have increased your risk. And there may have been damage that could lead to something we call COPD or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and that can affect people down the line. And that just varies from person to person. Some people will get it after smoking for a little bit. Some people won't get it for a long time and then smoke for a while. So that's just individually dependent. But I can tell you that after 10 to 15 years after you quit, your risk of lung cancer drops by half.
Okay, well, that's good to know. That's encouraging. That's encouraging.
You've done yourself some favors, sir.
Well, I guess so. Isn't it interesting, though, that after all these years that I still crave nicotine? That every once in a while it's like, oh, boy, one would sure taste good right now. That's how much of a stranglehold this drug, these cigarettes, the drug has on you, I guess, right?
Well, it manipulates the brain chemistry. And so that seed was planted inside the brain a long time ago. And you're right, it never really goes away.
Yeah. Well, be aware, you know, those of you that can, I hope you quit for your own good. And if you're, you know, you're just one of those people that can't or won't, believe me, I understand how difficult the whole thing is. If you have questions or thoughts, comments for Dr. Silver, 312-981-7200 is our phone number. We'll get to both your calls and your texts in just a moment. 312-981-7200. Next. Sunday morning, Dean Richards with Dr. Jeremy Silver. Answering your health questions, 312-981-7200. You can call in. You can text in if you'd like. 312-981-7200. Here's an interesting question related to what we're talking about. Can sun damage early in life show up later in life?
Yes. The short answer is yes. There is a long lead time in some cases, and I don't know what the maximum lead time is, 20, 30 years, but I do know that you can definitely develop some pigmentation early in life that over time can become concerning. And so if you have any kind of moles or liver spots, as they're called, or freckles that are changing, or anything that suddenly appears that wasn't there before, particularly that's dark or has irregular borders or just looks concerning, your mother says, hey, you should get that looked at. Your friend says, oh, I didn't notice that. Go get it looked at.
I have on one of my hands, I have those, I guess you, what you're calling liver spots. I've heard them call age spots. Same thing, right?
Sure.
But my dermatologist said, sorry to tell you, pal, that's sun damage that you have. But my dad had them like crazy. And I thought, oh, great. Thanks for passing those on. But apparently it's all my years of not protecting myself properly, being out in the sun, I guess, right?
That's correct.
Mm. Well, somebody pay attention to what doctors and all the experts are telling us. 630 area code asks, does vaping affect your lungs as bad as nicotine?
Vaping, I think the jury is still out. I think there's certainly evidence that the chemicals in the vape liquid are not helpful and may be harmful. We know that that there's substances that quote unquote are cancer causing. But I think by and large, would we rather that you vape than smoke cigarettes? I think the answer is yes. So one harm is certainly less than the other, but that doesn't mean that it's zero harm, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 630 area code says a friend has been diagnosed with the flu type B. Was this covered with only the one flu shot that we got in the fall? What's the difference between flu type A and flu type B?
I guess the biggest difference is that flu B doesn't affect animals. But in terms of kids and adults, the flu B sometimes causes milder illness. Flu B tends to be more prevalent in kids than adults. The vaccine should provide some protection against both. But again, it's not, nothing's perfect. And so most people with flu B, however, do just fine. And it's tends to be less worrisome when I see people with that infection.
Yeah. Are we out of flu season right now or not really?
I think we're out of the surge, but certainly there's still flu circulating. And I think we're in an environment now where, we're going to see flu almost all year round, where it'll attenuate for periods of time, but it won't totally go away completely. But we're definitely out of the high respiratory season, that's for sure.
And only because we don't have enough things to worry about already. We're hearing these stories all the time about bird flu. Is that something that the general population should be concerned with?
Well, I think I'm not lying awake, worrying about it at night. But I think in the back of my mind, you always are concerned when you have animal viruses that then can hop between species and then potentially infect humans potentially drive another pandemic. That's kind of the background worry. But I think there's already a vaccine for bird flu available. And so if it did become an issue, we'd kind of be primed for that, I think, as a public health network. So I wouldn't be freaked out about it. But, you know, I think it wouldn't be surprising to me if one day we started seeing bird flu in people.
How do people get bird flu?
Well, it typically will hop from one species to another. So I know that it was found in cattle, for instance.
Oh boy.
And so then you have a mutation in a cow, and somebody who's milking the cow or working with the cattle is around the cow, is exposed to the virus. They become, a carrier of the virus, and then it kind of goes from there.
So that's
the thought of how it might start.
What about the cattle has the bird flu? I eat a steak, and I get bird flu. Is that a scenario or not really?
I think by the time the steak is cooked, the flu is killed. Now, there are certain viruses called prion diseases. We think of something like mad cow disease. Now, those can be passed in the meat of an animal, but they're extremely rare. And the U.S. Department of Agriculture is screening for those types of illnesses constantly. But I'd actually be thinking more of the virus kind of passing into a milk product.
Mm.
But again, most of these products are pasteurized or heated at a high. Yeah. So, I think more likely it's somebody working alongside the animal that then comes out in the community and passes it as opposed to coming through the food chain.
Got it. Let's see if we can get a quick call in here from Mike. You're on with Dr. Jeremy Silver. Hi.
Hello. Hello, doctor. I got a quick question for you. I have been diagnosed with AFib for over 10 years, and I've had two ablations to hopefully cure the symptoms, but I've recently had another AFib episode, and I know that with AFib, you're at a high risk of stroke. My wife has been waking up numerous times over the past couple of months with numbness in my legs, numbness to my face, slurring of words. By the time I get to the ER, they do a CT, they do the MRI, they cannot find any evidence of stroke. The neurologist is saying that I may have nerve damage in my neck. Can those symptoms mimic stroke?
Well, Mike, thanks for calling, and I'm sorry to hear about the clinical course you've had. It sounds rough. To answer your question, yes, nerve damage can definitely mimic stroke. By the same token, you've got this well-described disease that's definitely a risk factor. Do you have a cardiologist that's following you along and is kind of thinking about next steps for you?
Yeah, let's hope that he does. He's not on the line anymore.
Okay.
He's probably listening to the question, but
sure.
It sounds like he needs to, what you were leading to, and you need to follow up with cardiologists.
Yes.
With something of that nature. We are flat out of time here, so I'm going to say thank you, Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern Medicine, Kishwaukee Hospital. A great segment, doctor, but even more important than that, not a single dropout on our phone line.
Yeah, I guess. Dean, we can tell the phone doctor he doesn't need to make a house call.
That's exactly right. Have a great Sunday, doctor. Thank you.
And you.